You're listening to Succeed, Just Let Go, the podcast that'll change how you think and change your life. I'm Willie Horton and I'm a psychologist, been helping people change their lives since 1996, broadcasting from the French Alps, and delighted to have you along. Let's take this week's step in the right direction. If you've listened to our last episode, you will recollect that we were talking about how to deal with other people. That episode was predicated on the assumption that most of the people that you will encounter in life are what I would describe as normal, crazy people. And it's a fair assumption, or more than a fair assumption, because according to a whole body of science in the field of behavioral psychology, developmental psychology, cognitive psychology, and neuroscience, they all coalesce around the understanding that the vast majority of people, some studies would put it at 95 or 96% of people, are not in control of their own state of mind and therefore qualify for my definition of being normal, crazy people. They don't know what's going on in their own head. They're on automatic pilot. They're doing the same things day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out, and expecting different results, expecting that they'll change their lives by continually banging their head off the proverbial brick wall. Again, if you recollect our last episode, you will know that we started off in exploring how we deal with other people by exploring how you deal with the other person in your own head, what developmental and cognitive psychology call the conceptual self, the person that you think you are, warts and all. In this episode, I want to take this conversation a little further in exploring not so much how we deal with other people, but how we actually build meaningful relationships that enhance our life and indeed the lives of those with whom we have these meaningful relationships. Because we can't go through life succumbing to the knowledge that most of the people that we meet are normal, crazy people. We can't go through life in isolation. We can't go through life on a one-person crusade, because no man is an island, as the old expression goes. No person is an island. We are social beings. We thrive in social situations. Now, the mistake that the normal crazy person would make is that that means I need to have loads of social connections. You don't need to have loads of social connections. You need to have the right connections. I had a conversation with a client a couple of months ago, somebody who, when I had met them first, said they were very lonely people indeed. And they decided that they needed to connect with as many people as possible. Well down the road in our conversations, I said to this individual, I said, are you happy with the menagerie of contacts and connections that you now have? And she said to me, well, not really, because most of them are normal, crazy people. She said, but I'm collecting people, effectively collecting relationships. I said, well, would you prefer to have a wardrobe full of fast fashion? I was going to mention Zara, but Zara might take exception to being described as fast fashion. Would you prefer a wardrobe full of cheap clothes or one or two Christian Dior outfits? And she said, I know what the proper answer is, but she said, I'm collecting fast fashion at the moment. The proper answer is, of course, that all we need for a perfect life is, first of all, our own presence of mind and a presence of mind shared with a couple of like-minded people. This same individual said to me, but how am I going to find a like-minded person? There aren't many of us around. And as I said to her, you only need to bump into one of them. And when we are in the zone and when we are in flow, that flow and the synchronicity that it creates tends to lead us in the direction of the relationships that are best for us. But let's explore this from the ground up in the same way as we did last week in relation to dealing with normal crazy people. Let's start with the relationship that you have with yourself. Now, in this case, I'm not talking about the conceptual self. I'm talking about who you really are. Everybody, when I meet them for the first time, has no idea who they really are. They may have had the odd glimpse of it when confronted by a life-threatening situation, when they did things that they thought they couldn't do, when, to quote somebody that I was talking to a couple of months ago, when they said that they felt as if they had taken on superhuman powers. All they had done is had a glimpse at who they really are, rather than being under the thumb of their own conceptual self or under the thumb of their normal way of thinking. But most of us, in our ordinary everyday lives, until we take steps to wake ourselves up, are dead from the neck up and are convinced that it is our conceptual self that is the fairest representation of who we actually are. That clearly couldn't be the case. Let's recap on why that couldn't be the case for just a moment. You are effectively almost a blank slate when you are born. I said almost. There's no such thing as black or white in any of these conversations. But you're not born with a personality, and you're not even born with a predisposition to certain temperamental proclivities. We're almost a blank slate. You learn a lot of stuff in the first year of your life, and you don't really know that you're learning it because your neural pathways are still under construction. In particular, during the third year of your lives, as we've discussed before, you learn how to live with other people. You learn what developmental psychology calls theory of mind. You begin to realize that everybody has their own mind. Everybody doesn't share the view that you are the center of the universe. And you learn how to collaborate, communicate, negotiate, and manipulate with other people. This is when we take the psychological snapshots that give us our fundamental impression of who we think we are. So if I'm 65 years of age, well, no, I actually am 65 years of age. So now here I am at 65 years of age. If I'm operating from my conceptual self, I am operating on the basis of snapshots that I took 62 years ago. Clearly, those perceptions that I've carried around with me for all of that time are not in any way a true reflection or representation of who I actually really am. Now, the key word there is real or really. We know that reality exists. We know that reality is never perceived by people using their minds normally. What they perceive is their version of reality that has been filtered through the thoughts that they have been carrying around with them since they were young and impressionable. In exactly the same way, the real you exists, but you will never actually experience the real you as long as you're using your mind normally. Your behavior, or your misbehavior, I should say, will be automatically dictated by the reactive automated processes that the normal way of thinking actually uses to enable you make it through the day until, as I said a moment ago, until you wake up. We wake up by coming to our senses. It's kind of obvious when you put it that way. We come to our senses by learning to pay attention to them experientially and non-judgmentally. In other words, we breathe and we experience what it feels like to breathe. We listen and we actually hear, rather than reinterpreting what we're listening to through our automated thought processes. In other words, we meditate. And as I said to you last week, there's no alternative to meditating. Neuroscience is crystal clear in relation to this. The only scientifically validated way we have of coming to our senses, of reigniting our attentional spotlight, of restructuring our subcortical brain, is meditation. A couple of people have said to me over the last week as a result of what I said in that podcast that they're not very good at meditating, or they don't know how to meditate, or what does meditation actually mean, or they can't meditate, or meditation isn't for them. Now, they are all comments that have been generated by thoughts in these people's heads. To quote John Kabat-Zinn, the individual who devised mindfulness-based stress reduction therapy at the University of Massachusetts Medical School in the late 1980s, if you can breathe, you can meditate. The only thing that'd be standing between you and your ability to meditate is the thought that you couldn't, or the thought that meditation is strange or some weird spiritual practice. Meditation, from our perspective in these conversations, is a training exercise which we undergo on a daily basis to restructure our brain, to take an evolutionary quantum leap forward from the brain that evolution gave us. That brain, remember, that evolution gave us, is one that is incapable of focusing on the present moment and therefore incapable of experiencing the reality of the present moment and therefore incapable of experiencing the reality of who we really are. Let me put that the other way around. When you meditate, you will experience the real you. It isn't something that you will perceive. It will be a pure experience. It will be an experience of how your body feels when you breathe, or it will be an experience of tingling in, for example, the palms of your hands. I just pick on the example of the palms of your hands for the simple reason that there is a high concentration of terminals of energy meridians in the palms of your hands. And as we said last week or the week before, the energy meridians known to acupuncturists for millennia are in fact known now to the University of Seoul in South Korea as the primovascular system. These energy meridians, this system, comes alive when we stop thinking. Or should I say, because that actually suggests that there is some effort involved in stopping our thinking mind. This energy system comes alive when we experience the reality of the moment through meditation. And bear in mind, as we've said before, we meditate not to experience the reality of the moment while we're meditating. We meditate so that through experiencing the reality of the moment while we're meditating, we're able to experience the reality of the moment when we're not meditating. In other words, when it matters in the cut and thrust of our everyday lives, when life throws its ups and downs and challenges at us, we're able to meet those challenges effortlessly without saying to ourselves, oh, I couldn't do this or I couldn't do that. How would little old me be able to deal with that? We meditate to experience not little old me anymore. We meditate to experience something that tells us that the little old me we thought we were is just a figment, not even of our own imagination. It's a figment of the imagination of people who did things to us when we were young and impressionable. Once we begin to experience ourselves, our true selves, we begin to understand that we can trust ourselves. So many people over the years have said to me, oh, I can't trust myself to make a proper decision anymore. Look at the mess I've made of some of the previous life choices that I've made. And I keep saying to them, the person who made those choices, first of all, they were all automatic choices based on what you learned when you were young and impressionable. So the choices that you made as an adult using outdated information couldn't have been the right choices. They are not the evidence on which you need to base your understanding of whether or not you can trust yourself. They're irrelevant. As we said in a podcast a number of weeks ago, you can't learn from the mistakes you made when you were operating on autopilot, because it wasn't you who made those mistakes. It was your conceptual self that made them automatically. But once we begin to wake up through meditation, and once we begin to experience the reality of who we really are, then we begin to understand that we can inherently trust ourselves. Now, this is a crucial step that we need to take before we can start building the kind of beautiful relationships that people who are in the zone have. Now let's think about one of the fundamental relationships many, many people have in their lives. Because in most conversations I've had over the last 28 years, people will stop me kind of mid-morning if we're having a one-to-one, a day-long or a two-day one-to-one, as I used to face-to-face in the old days before Zoom. People would stop me before lunchtime on the first day and say, what have I done to my children? My children are 8 or 9 or 12 or 13. What did I do to them 3 years old, and can I undo it? And the answer, of course, is that if you were operating on automatic pilot when you had children of 2 or 3 years old, you did untold damage to them unwittingly because you weren't present, because you were operating on automatic pilot from your conceptual self. That means little throwaway remarks that you as an adult wouldn't even pay any attention to left a deep scar on the open-minded 2 or 3 year old. What can we do to undo that? Well, all we need to do is turn up for our children. Let me put that in plainer English. People often say to me, and you will have heard this expression as well, oh, I want to be there for you. I want to be there for my children. Now, people who say that, you know, people who say, I want to be there for a relative who is dying or going through a difficult period, they don't know what that means because they don't know how to be there because they've never experienced it because they're operating from a normal automatic way of thinking. I was nearly going to say a normal automatic way of being, but that's not being, that's thinking. That's not living, that's existing. So if you've ever used that expression or ever heard that expression, I want to be there for you, that is meaningless to somebody who hasn't experienced what it is like to be present. As we said a few weeks ago, to have presence. But once you experience who you really are through meditation, you are. Now you're present. Now you can be really there for those around you. So let's go back to one of the most fundamental relationships we have with our children. We can't unpick whatever psychological snapshots were taken before the age of 3, nor can they, for the simple reason that there is a phenomenon known in developmental psychology as childhood amnesia. The shutters come down on the psychological snapshots that we took before the age of 3 at around the age of 3, so that other people can't get in and mess with the fundamentals of who we think we are. Those fundamentals are only of who we think we are. They're not the real us. Now, in later life, a psychoanalyst might go back and, using hypnotherapy, attempt to raise those shutters. And that's a dangerous place to go. It's also a useless and time-consuming and energy-wasting place to go, because you don't need to go back and undo what you only thought was done to you in the first place. What you need to do is simply learn to experience who you really are. And that, again, is only through meditation. In other words, we don't need to go back and rake over the past. We need, through experiencing the present, to let the past go. You might need to re-listen to that last sentence a couple of times. So therefore, when parents ask me, how can I undo the damage that I unwittingly did to my children when they were young and impressionable? My answer simply is, be there for them. Be there with them. Because, as we said a couple of weeks ago, the rising tide of your presence will rise the boats of those around you. There's much more to it than that. We could explore from the perspective of how our mood affects our DNA and how we share DNA with our children, and therefore how our presence impacting our DNA actually impacts their DNA. We could go even deeper. Because when you explore, for example, the tingling in the palms of your hands that I mentioned a few minutes ago as a result of your energy flowing freely, You begin to experience the reality of what you actually are. Not just who you actually are, but what you actually are. We are flowing energy. And 96% of people are blocked energy because the thoughts block the flow of their energy. But when we liberate ourselves from our own thoughts by paying attention to the present, when we liberate ourselves from our own past by experiencing the present, then our energy flows. And quantum physics tells us that the flow of our own energy has an impact on the flow of all energy, and in particular, the energy of those people to whom we are emotionally closest. I didn't say physically closest, because quantum physics tells us that the communication experienced by flowing energy is non-local. In other words, my mood now, my presence now, will have an impact on the mood and presence of my children in Paris, who are an 8-hour drive from where I'm sitting as I record this. I know that sounds weird, but there are, and we could spend hours exploring them, there are so many pieces of research, so much evidence from the field of biopsychology, the field of bioelectricity, and the field of quantum physics that explain exactly how flowing freed up energy is in tune with energy, full stop, which creates and allows us experience the synchronicities that we've talked about in some of these podcast episodes as well. You see, the way in which we think the world works is a million miles removed from how the world actually works. The way in which we were educated, as we said before, based on the premise that we needed to better ourselves, the way we were educated takes us a million miles in the wrong direction. We need to simply experience who we really are, experience what we really are, turn up to our lives, be present, be there for those closest to us, allow our energy uplift those around us, allow our presence and the rising tide of our presence lift all boats. Now, there are obviously global implications for this, but we're not going to change the world through this podcast. What we're going to do is allow and enable you change your own little world, and that has a ripple effect. So, for starters, in the course of today's podcast episode, we have explored one of the most fundamental relationships that we have as human beings. Relationships with people whom we love unconditionally, our own children. And our own children can do all kinds of things to us. I've three of them, been there, done that, have the t-shirts, plural, but we still love them unconditionally. But what about other people? What about our friends? What about our acquaintances? What about the wardrobe full of fast fashion that most people have and most people take for friendship? As I've said before, many people with whom I've worked over the last 28 years and more have expressed concern or fear to me as they start out on this journey that they will lose some of their friends. And then they realize that the people that they thought were friends drift away. Somebody said on one of our program owners' Zooms a couple of weeks ago, a number of the relationships that she had simply petered out without any conflict, without any hurt, without any harm. People just drifted away. People who were members of tribes that we thought we needed to belong to fill the black hole in our own perceived inadequacy that we talked about over the last couple of weeks in this podcast. Generally speaking, no, not generally speaking, always, people realize that many of the people with whom they associate are, first of all, normal crazy people, which is always a bad thing, if they're, in particular, if they're not willing to let their own boats be raised by other people's presence. People who are there to take rather than to give. Even people who ask for a friend's help. We had a long conversation about this on our program owner Zoom a couple of months ago. People who ask for help, and then when you give them the help that they've asked for, you realize they weren't asking for help at all in the first place, and they discard your help or your advice. What they were looking for was your attention. What they were looking for, in fact, was your energy, like the energy vampires that we talked about over the last few weeks. They're not your friends. They are people who are members of the same tribe that you thought you needed to be a member of to make yourself feel better about yourself. But the more you realize that you never needed to feel better about yourself in the first place, because your flowing energy, the reality of who you really are, is perfect and an integral part of the universe in the first place, you don't need people who are going to suck you dry. But through your presence, you can give your energy out to as many people as possible. And that changes the dynamic of the relationships that we have with people utterly, beyond anything that our thinking mind could imagine. Then you end up with a small number of real and proper relationships. Now, as I've alluded to, somebody said to me recently, but this is a fairly solitary journey. It's a lonely journey. It might be solitary, but it's not lonely. And we covered that a few weeks ago, where we said you could be on your own, and that would be a fact, but being lonely is thinking about being on your own. Loneliness isn't a fact, it's something that you choose, it's something that you do to yourself, like stress, as we've discussed on many occasions. But when you experience who you really are and what you actually are as a result of being present, you will realize that the synchronicities that we've talked about before will not only lead you on your journey, but they will lead you on your journey in a way where you encounter like-minded people, where you encounter real friends, where you experience the joy of real relationships, which may be few and far between, but they're like gold nuggets as distinct from cheap jewelry. This is all part and parcel of the adventure that we all take when we sit down to meditate, the adventure that we all take when we say to ourselves, there must be more to life than the humdrum of everyday life. The adventure on which we embark when we realize that I'm not going to change my life by continually behaving in the same automatic way. The adventure that we take when we realize that last year's New Year's resolutions, which were the same as the year before's and are the same as this year's resolutions, they're not going to change my life. The adventure that we take when we begin to experience who we really are as a result of simply being. You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. To get involved, join me in my Facebook group, strangely enough called To Succeed, Just Let Go. And for more information, visit www.willie-hoyle.com.